All right, so our final presentation, and then we have lots of time for questions. We have two presenters, so you can have a good amount of time, both of you. We have Dr. Ifeoma Uda, who's the Director of Research Monitoring and Evaluation at the Global AIDS Foundation in Oakland, California. She served as an M&E advisor under PEPFAR with both CDC and USAID, based with national AIDS programs in the Eastern Caribbean and Southeast Asia. Her research interests are focused on most at-risk populations, in particular understanding resiliency as it impacts HIV testing, care, and treatment access for MSM of color. And then we also have Christina Grijalva, who served as a research project coordinator at La Clinica de la Raza, is that right, in Oakland, California, for the Oakland Late Diagnosis Study. And she's worked as a health researcher, educator, care manager, and outreach worker in the San Francisco Bay Area, and has taught at San Francisco State University, University of San Francisco, and received her MA in Ethnic Studies, and is a doctoral candidate at UC Berkeley. Good for you. All right, both of you can come up and welcome you to the stage. They're both talking about integrating HIV testing with immigrant health and welfare programs in Oakland, California, best practice in reaching an underground population.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Last session of the conference, so hopefully you will.
But the best.
Thank you for the introduction. Again, my name is Ifeoma Uda. I'm with the Pangea Global AIDS Foundation. The Pangea Global AIDS Foundation, just as a quick background, was for all intents and purposes the international arm of the San Francisco AIDS Foundation. We separated out about 3 years ago and moved to Oakland, California. We have no disclosures, no relationships to disclose, both myself and Christina. And today we'll be talking about specifically a project that was funded by the Office of AIDS Research, the NIH, to explore reasons around late diagnosis of HIV infection amongst African Americans and Latinos in Oakland. So we'll go through a little bit of what the actual background and context of the actual study was, and then Christina will go into more specific detail about some of the findings that came out of one of our pilot studies. The study itself was based within a community-based participatory research framework. Meredith Minkler, who is actually presenting right this second at her own session, was one of our co-PIs on the study. So unfortunately, she wasn't here to be able to join us. So a little bit of background on late diagnosis. Late diagnosis of HIV essentially means an AIDS diagnosis within 1 year or at the same time as an initial HIV positive test result. And it is a likely driver of HIV-related health disparities, particularly in communities of color. While nationally in the United States, you see the issue of late diagnosis occurring with around 40% of those who test positive within their first year of their AIDS diagnosis, and this is reflected as well as in Oakland. But if you look at what's happening within groups, there's obviously huge disparities amongst African Americans and Latinos who are being diagnosed late. This diagram further emphasizes some of those disparities, particularly if you look at the data from 2006 to 2010. Late diagnosis during that time frame for the county was there were 513 cases, whereas 237 of those were African American and 102 of those were Latino. A little bit of background that is not necessarily represented here in these slides. Alameda County in particular was the first local health jurisdiction in the United States back in 1998 to declare a local state of emergency amongst African Americans. There's also a second standing state of emergency around injection drug use and HIV. Those emergencies still stand. The Board of Supervisors declare those states of emergencies every 2 weeks in our county. So moving into the 13 years into that epidemic or that state of emergency, it's really become a really big issue that we begin to look at why are these state of emergencies exist in Alameda County. So that led us into wanting to kind of explore a little bit more about what was happening around late diagnosis in particular in these communities. We were funded, like I said, through the Office of AIDS Research at NIH to explore the individual and structural barriers to earlier detection of HIV, to make county and statewide HIV testing and case data readily available to local communities. At the time of our study, the county had not released an HIV epidemiology report since 2006. There was a four-year gap in knowledge of what was really understanding and going on in our community. to engage community stakeholders to identify and develop community-driven responses to early HIV detection, and to pilot test promising community-driven responses in Oakland. And so really that was where we began the process of using community-based participatory research to engage in the county for a year to understand how could we get our hands on more relevant HIV epi data, how could we work with partners in the community such as CalPEP and La Clinica della Raza. CalPEP stands for the California Prostitutes Education Project. It's a community-based organization that primarily focused on African Americans in high-risk communities, and La Clinica della Raza also provides primary care services in Oakland. And again, our partners with UC Berkeley, we worked directly with Meredith Minkler on that study. So the critical findings from the CBPR aspect of the project, this was a three-year study, and the first year and a half we spent a lot of time kind of in the iterative process of understanding what did the community really want to know about late diagnosis, what did they understand about whether or not it was happening. We did a series of focus groups. We also held six community forums jointly with African Americans and Latinos and then separately in those communities. And those community forums helped really inform and drive the data collection practices, which were mostly qualitative, but eventually became more structured in the pilot studies, which Christina will go over. But in the phase one part of the study, in terms of really understanding why late diagnosis was occurring, the findings that came out of that the CBPR process were to, in order to address structural barriers, that we needed to make a case for integrated testing models in communities of color. And in particular, communities really wanted to understand and see how we could partner with non-traditional HIV service providers to scale up access to testing for hard-to-reach populations. So essentially, folks really wanted us to focus not necessarily with working with traditional HIV providers, but how could we work with social service programs? How could we work in areas such as what's occurring in DC with the DMV? How could we work with food programs and start to begin to integrate testing into those settings? So through that, we came up with a series of recommendations that, again, were grounded in the CBPR framework that came directly out of working with the community-based organizations. We asked our organizations who were the communities that they themselves, because of their requirements with their funding and who they were having to see, who were they not able to access. With CalPEP, which we're not able to present that data today, but we would love to be able to answer any questions around that, CalPEP particularly wanted to expand HIV testing and partner counselor referral services for recently released men and their partners. And so that is a pilot that took place as a part of this larger CBPR study. And with La Clinica della Raza, which Christina will cover, we looked at scale-up of HIV testing for low-wage immigrant workers, the LWIW pilot. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to my co-presenter.
Thank you, Ife. I'm just a tad shorter. Okay, so again, my name is Christina Grijalva. I'm going to elaborate more on the LWIW pilot program, and just a little note on the term that we use. Prior to this, usually the term day laborers were used. Oh, good song. That's okay. So it was a street level health project themselves who suggested using LWIW because it was more encompassing of the clients who go to street level health. Okay, so our target population, low-wage immigrant workers, our objectives were to assess the HIV testing needs and preferences of LWIWs who access street level health project, as well as to assess risk behavior and testing patterns. And we did this to really find out what the feasibility and acceptability of increasing testing services for LWIW. So part of this that we were also looking at was looking at service delivery needs. So looking at barriers and facilitators, not just for HIV testing, but also with other services that they provided. And this happened in a period of 14 weeks, and it started in January through March of 2013, just to give you, it was rather recently. And La Clinica, prior to this, had provided maybe once, twice a month, somewhat inconsistent HIV testing over at street level health. And this upped it to twice a week. Okay. All right, so a little bit more about who Street Level Health Project is, what they provide as a community center. They were founded in 2002 by two pre-med students, actually. They provide health screenings, more like, I would say, like a triage. They provide hot meals a few times a week. Workshops and wellness activities are also directed towards women. Food bag distribution, which we found out is mainly attended by women families, as well as English and sexual health classes. Besides that, they provide, they have an Oakland's Workers Collective, and they are quite active. So they provide legal, health, and professional development within that. There's also nutrition consultations, and there's a small amount of mental health consultation as well. And it's really, I mean, if you're there, it's a constant in and out of people. People come through, and it feels like a safe space for them to come into. And that goes along with what we were talking about with camouflage services, is that there's no big banner saying HIV testing or anything like that. And so you have already this developed relationship of trust with the staff at Street Level Health. Okay, excuse me. Okay, so our methodology, we had a structured survey consisting of 58 questions, and then they had the option to test. This survey would take about 45 minutes to an hour. I was the one administering, actually, the survey. As far as recruitment goes, this happened during the outreach with the SLHP outreach workers. They would go to where the day laborers were waiting for work. They distribute pan dulce, they sometimes distribute condoms and such. And as well as we did recruitment in the clinic waiting rooms during the health screenings, lunch, and food bag distribution. So after about a month, we reevaluated what was the most effective time to focus our recruitment. And we noticed that with the food bag distribution, it was more women who were coming, and our pilot program was more focused on the men. So we focused more on during the lunch times and the clinic waiting rooms and health screening. So this seemed to be a preference of outreach too from the staff themselves and from the doctor. There was an incentive for the survey, but not the testing, and this was something that the staff asked. They didn't want to set a precedent of testing for an incentive, something that they may not be able to provide later on. So the incentive was a $20 gift card for a local market. So like I said before, the pilot was 14 weeks. We increased to twice a week of testing. In the end, we had 71 surveys and 32 people who tested. Of those, 62 surveys were Latino-identified LWIW males, and of those, 30 decided to test after the survey. And you have to know that we only had one HIV test counselor, so if they were there to do the survey, which could take up to an hour, and then stay for the testing. But another thing we noticed with the clientele there is that since people are coming in and out, that there is more of a willingness to sort of to stick around if they had not found a job opportunity that morning. Okay, so demographics. I'm going to highlight a few of these. So 90% of the participants of the survey identified as Latino, half from Mexico, 30% Guatemala, 18% El Salvador. 79% had less than 12 years of education. 92% were born outside of the United States. 58% reported that their income in the last month was $500 or less. Nearly half of them spoke Spanish exclusively. And the length of time of living in the United States, the mean was 12 years, which shows that this is an established immigrant population. It also, you know, indicates what we've seen as well, is that there isn't so much of emphasis on the migrant fee. People have, because of structural, of course, the increased border and violence and such, they tend to stay and they're away from their families. Okay. And that also gives you an idea of why a center like this is quite important for the LWIWs, because it becomes this source of community for them. Okay, so assessing the HIV risk, we saw that mainly it was alcohol at 57%, marijuana 21%, as substances that were used in the last 6 months. The use of condoms, they're used more frequently with casual versus main partner at the last encounter, that's 88% versus 15%. Transactional sex, 54% had heard of men being offered money for sex while waiting for work opportunities, but only 29% admitted to being offered money for sex. Only 12% admitted to participating in transactional sex. So the question is could we have asked this question differently? And one of the things that was driving us to address this in our survey is that we were doing the formative work, such as with the focus groups. This is something that came up in a few of the focus groups. And this was transactional sex, where they were straight up being asked for sex in exchange for money, or they were being hired to work, and it ended up that they were, you know, that they wanted to have sex with them. So, 5 minutes. Okay, let me hurry this through. Okay. All right, so STIs was really, the reporting was really quite low, but again, this might have something to do with the way that we asked it. They may have not understood the various STIs that we were talking about, even though we did have input from the staff to try to play with the language a bit. But we did ask, has a doctor or nurse ever told you that you had such and such? Of course, many of these clients had not seen a doctor or a nurse, so they may not have even known that they had an STI. So that was a lesson that we learned. Also, HIV testing patterns really varied. While 67% had tested, last HIV test was taken 3 years ago, and that was the mean. So we know that we can refine the outreach here in terms of emphasizing routine testing. So main reasons for not testing included low or no risk perception of low risk, of no risk. Fear of knowing status. So often I would hear the men would tell me, no estoy listo, I'm just not ready to hear it right now. So again, exploring more of how can we help someone to be and have that kind of psychological support. And 10% did not know where to access test. This is something also very interesting, because we also, of course, the staff had input in what they wanted us to ask. And part of it is knowing more about what are barriers to accessing health services. So the question was, when you are sick and want to get medical advice treatment, how much of a problem is each of the following? And so you can see, particularly when we're considering the Affordable Care Act, which is not going to include the undocumented, 84% said don't have health insurance, 81% worried about the cost, transportation, being asked for documents, concern about the staff, and not being eligible because of not being documented. So what's different is that street level really functions as an entry portal for them. This is some place where they are not going to be asked for documentation. They already know this. They're coming in for other services. So 69% of the respondents had come in the past year for mail distribution. 60% had had health screenings, high blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, work-related injuries. They're there for social services as well because street level really does more structural interventions. They do work on immigrant rights and the municipal ID card program. The staff is bilingual, including a staff member speaking Mam. And in the end, we had an uptake of HIV testing and increased steadily. And even though we only focused on men and had no, you know, incentives for the women, 15 women also tested. They would be coming by and be like, oh, what are you up to? And you talk to them, and they wanted to be tested. Okay. So challenges and recommendations. We think that integrating HIV testing for LWIW is feasible. We have to ensure the privacy, just continue with street levels and their policy and not asking for documentation or considering finances, convenience. They have to do varied hours. And the challenge is that HIV funding prioritizes testing for population where positives are found. We didn't find positives. So that was something that we're like, well, you don't find positives, then why are we going to be funding, you know, testing there? Integration, we have to see that as an opportunity. The integration of testing can increase ability to engage LWIWs. And a critical lesson learned that you really need to know the population. It's very diverse and nuanced. For example, me not speaking Mam, even though there's some bilingual Mam and Spanish speakers, I was unable to access that population for the survey. They tend to be a more recent population. Using more vernacular for STIs, and let's see, and understanding limited access and prior exposure to health services with some of our questions. And, okay, so I don't have much time, but acknowledgements, we want to acknowledge our partners, Street Level Health Project, UC Berkeley, particularly Dr. Minkler in the School of Public Health, La Clínica de la Raza, Alameda County Department of Public Health, CalPEP, and the Community Advisory Board that we had. And thank you.
Great, thank you. Very interesting presentations, and I think it's very interesting after 3 days of hearing fabulous work being done that there's still so much work to do, and is challenging and invigorating all at the same time. But you know, my work is done in rural Appalachia, and it's very similar to still what I hear in inner city Baltimore and in California. We have still have some of the very same challenges related to barriers and access. And one day we're going to get there, right? We're going to figure this out. So very interesting. I want to bring all of the speakers up here, and now I will open to questions from the audience. So if you guys will all join me back up here. Who wants to start? Questions? Yes.
I thought that it was really great that the first two presenters were back-to-back because they somewhat, you know, needed each other. And with the first presenter, Carolyn, I had a question for you.
Sure.
In terms of what did you do to help roll out your project to bring the to educate the staff? Were there barriers or resistance to buy-in? And if there are any suggestions that you can give to me, because I'm having an issue with getting buy-in from the ED in my hospital.
Sure. So the first thing that in 2008, when we first got the grant from CDC and actually was channeled through the state, we were working in partnership with the state with, you know, rolling out the program. But the first thing that we did was identify champions in this institution. So most of our champions are not even related to, you know, in-house staff members in those emergency rooms. Some of them are the ED doctors. Others are the ED directors, but most of them, it was just a physician who said, you know what, we think that HIV is an issue in our community and that we think that we should do this. And we supported them and we used them to channel to the ED directors, to the CEOs, and presenting, this is the problem we have in Baltimore, and these are the kind of patients that your hospital is encountering, and they could be infected, but you're having missed opportunities. So it's identifying the champions in this organization and supporting them as the champions to provide them with the data, provide them with the resources that they need to sell the idea within the organizations. But even then, we find that we're still finding problems because, like one of the hospitals, I'm not going to say the name, we've been trying to roll out like a reimbursement thing, but a 40% profit margin was not good enough. So they were told they cannot do testing. Another hospital has told us point blank on our faces, while the ED director feels like it's an important service to their community, the hospital has, and we think it's more of a corporate probably issue, they've told us that we do not want to be identified as the HIV hospital. So there's all these barriers, and you'd think the providers would be more knowledgeable about HIV, but there's still a lot of stigma and a lot of myths, even amongst the providers. So it's educating them and using your champions to showcase that it's been done here. We can do it here. And so now what we are doing is having meetings with different organizations and inviting them. You might not get them, and you might be preaching to the same choir, but having sessions whereby you present of why routine testing is important, especially in healthcare settings.
So. Yeah, we've been able to utilize some of the champion doctors mm-hmm. to do peer-to-peer educational trainings around the importance of HIV testing. Mm-hmm.
The test.
Even when the doctors are ordering
them. So the way we overcame the nurses is also including the nurses and the techs in the conversation. So not only were just physicians presented to, you know, the whole data thing, it was also nurses, the ED nurse manager, the techs, and identifying everybody who's going to be involved, the lab director. And the other important thing is not only just including the people who are going to do the testing, it's also the lab folks, because they're the ones who will push you back. The legal folks, oh, we cannot do that. How are we going to do that, and who's going to follow up? So the legal folks, the risk management folks, the whole shebang, you have to include everybody. And it takes time. It takes time. So we are outsiders of the health department, so we couldn't enforce policy changes in the hospitals. But what we did was emphasize the fact that the Maryland law had changed, so you don't have to do the extensive pre-counseling, you don't have to have a separate consent. So we had presentations with the AETC, which is the AIDS Education Training Center, presenting on the changes in the Maryland law that may have helped us a little bit. But the, you know, internal policy changes, those had to be championed by the individual champions. And as I said, our champions were not just physicians. It was just that it was the nurses, the techs, everybody who was going to be involved. Yeah.
I have a question for you. Just to clarify, who is actually performing this test? Is it the hospital staff?
Hospital staff. So all we do is give you the money, you decide how you want to do it. If you want to hire a person, that's up to you. If you want to integrate it into the staff duties, it's up to the hospital to do it. So we are letting the hospitals own the project. So it's and it varies. So one of the hospitals uses a social worker. Another hospital uses students. They have the availability. We have two major institutions in Baltimore, University of Maryland and Hopkins. So they utilize a lot of students, and also they hire some of those counselors as, you know, students. And another one is dedicated counselors, and one more is using some staff, but also have a dedicated person who kind of does the follow-up work. So it varies.
And then how do you identify with the
testing is offered by everybody, to everybody, but the models change different a little bit. The institution that I said they currently now have fourth generation blood-based testing, so as you're coming to triage, the triage nurse is the one who's telling you you're offering testing, and if they're there for symptoms that will qualify, you know, call for blood draws, they will check, the nurse orders the blood draw, and then, but if they're not getting any blood draw done, they get oral tests, and other models are whereby the counselor goes from room to room, and others it's being offered by the triage and the counselor is notified of the patients who accepted. And even then, we found that most of the counselors have more acceptance rates than the providers themselves. So it varies. Yeah.
Back of the room.
nudging organizations like the Community Clinic Association of Broward County to, for clinics to share practices or share ideas?
So the way we identified the clinics to participate and hospitals was as random as possible in terms of like sampling method. And so we obtained a list of all medical facilities as defined by the County of Los Angeles to come up with a list. And then we parsed that list based on the qualifiers. So they had to be located within the city limits, and they needed to be located in a community that had the poverty rate at, I believe it was 21.2%, and then the composition of the community needed to be Latino and African American. And so that was, it was basically just random, a random sample based on that. And we hadn't considered the other possibility that you just mentioned, the Community Health Center Alliance that we said.
It's a community clinic association in Oakland. So a lot of the community health centers get together and kind of share policies and things like that.
That would be a good organization to provide the data to.
Right,
just
some follow-up.
Yeah. Thank you.
I had another question about the ED testing. We just recently implemented that in our ED. Have you found, I know you mentioned 8 to 15 hour shifts or 24 hour shifts, have you found a certain time of the day that you guys are getting the most positives, or is it better?
I want to say about 2 years ago we looked at that, and it varied from hospital to hospital. So the inner city hospitals, we noticed that especially on around the 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. time was the ones that was around the time that we used to get a lot of the positives, but it wasn't true for other hospitals. So it's not clear. It varies from one hospital to another. So I don't have a definite answer for that. And also some hospitals, because they cannot consent a patient, you know, like Saturday nights, the emergency room is very busy, but some of those patients were not consentable because they were really high on something, or gunshot wounds or something. So those might be patients that you want to test, but they're not consentable at that time. So it varies. So you have to evaluate based on your hospital and what your guidelines are, what your protocols are.
Other questions? Comments?
Yeah.
For the last speaker, you spoke about some language challenges. Were you saying Hmong or Hmong?
Hmong. So M-A-N. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The indigenous language,
from?
Mostly from Mayan, Central America. Mm-hmm. So there is only there's one staff member who could speak, who would say trilingual. Unfortunately, I think that had an influence. And there's one thing in being able to speak Spanish and being able to sit down for almost an hour and answer questions, and I think that was a factor in not having as much participation as from those clients. And I compared that to the statistics that the client had of who comes in, and we didn't have as many.
How many do you choose
among speakers? It's increased in the past couple of years as there's been more. So folks primarily from Guatemala, and then Guatemala, El Salvador, and then Honduras is a small amount.
I was curious about that too, so I'm glad you asked that.
Yeah.
Other questions or comments? No. Yeah.
You had mentioned something about what the DMV is doing in DC. What is, I don't know if that is.
Oh, yeah.
So, go ahead. I can speak. So Gilead Pharmaceuticals has been working with the health department in DC, and also with the consultant there by the name of Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick.
Can you guys hear?
CDC.
No, can you come speak at the microphone? Because I know what you're about. It's a great program. Please, share. Yeah.
So Gilead Pharmaceuticals has partnered with the health department in D.C. as well as a number of HIV docs that work in community clinics, and one by, in particular, by the name of Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, who used to work at CDC, and they have been implementing routine testing in social service settings that are non-HIV specific, and one particular site that they've had tremendous success in is at the DMV. It's actually providing a mobile testing clinic at the DMV, and you've got those massive lines of people that are waiting at the DMV, and being able to integrate and provide testing in those settings, and they've been able to find a number. I don't know what the stats are specifically, but they've been able to find, they've been able to find a number of positives in those kind of settings.
I think it's the staff, I think.
Yeah, right? They do. Yeah, yeah.
Do you get a discount on the DMV? Or?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I
want to
do it.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a similar project that we're going to implement in Oakland, where we're going to provide HIV testing as a part of gyms. So partnering with 24 Hour Fitness and the local YMCA to provide HIV testing as a part of your gym membership. So if you come in and accept an HIV test, then you'd get a discounted rate for that month.
Mm-hmm. There was an intervention down in New Orleans where they're working within the court system,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing routine testing, particularly on the days where there are drug cases or prostitution, and they're able to get the family and people that are involved.
Yeah, that is definitely what was one of the big central pieces of our initial formative research, was to provide HIV testing in non-traditional HIV centers. It was a huge piece, a huge finding that came out of the CDPR work that we worked with Dr. Minkler. I mean, we heard that consistently in every single focus group and every single community forum, that folks wanted to see HIV testing not done by HIV/AIDS organizations. And so that's kind of been the major policy push that we're trying to institute locally in our county as well. So.
We found similar things out in middle of nowhere, rural Appalachia. They wanted it like food banks and laundromats and the places that they go where they don't have to go to Planned Parenthood. Other questions or comments? None? So how do you think the Affordable Care Act is going to impact? I know some of you touched on it, but it sounds like it may be covered as routine preventative service. Yeah. So we're going to have to stay tuned as to what that's going to do.
Street level not having to also put an effort in the same people not being scammed by people saying that, oh, I can get the benefit from ATA or something. There are vulnerable populations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all going to be very interesting to see what plays out in the next couple of years. So, go ahead.
We're looking to develop an accessible training module that would be online. Mm-hmm. And I'm just throwing it out to anyone, if that sounds like something that you think that either clinics or hospitals would take advantage of. We haven't done the testing for it yet, but the idea is that there were these barriers to testing and education, mm-hmm. and we thought, well, if we have an online video-based training module that people can access at any time rather than having to leave their work tests, that it would help with the integration.
Can you share the information?
Yeah.
Can you share the information?
Sure.
I think it's a great idea. What we learned in implementing the routine testing at the hospital is that the peer-to-peer model worked really well, like doctors to doctors, inmates to inmates. We've had doctors go to speak to the inmates, and they're not as receptive as one of their peers to hear what's being said. Plus, a lot of things come into play, especially with the inmates, since they are actually performing the test. They know what the barriers are, so they can help each other to problem solve.
Thank you.
Which jurisdiction are you from?
I'm in Philadelphia at St. Christopher's Hospital.
Okay, if you don't have any other further questions or comments, I'm going to allow the panel to stay up here, and if you want to come ask questions individually, unless anyone has any last-minute questions. I know everybody's got flights to catch, so... All right. Be safe going home. Thank you for coming to the very last session, unless you're going to the closing session. And we'll see you all next year in New Orleans. So thanks again to our fabulous panel.